Well, Toast, we've got the turkey, the stuffing, the mashed potatoes, the cranberries. So, what are you thankful for this year? Aw, me too. I am also thankful for Kristen Stewart and Aubrey Plaza and Happiest Season. Their looks? Their chemistry? No, I do not think Abby should have stayed with Harper. I feel like I don't see enough of the good times in their relationship. Like, I know we have the montage up top, but the sort of telling rather than showing, and I empathize with how hard it must be coming from such a judgmental family, but Harper treats Abby so horribly. At the end, it just felt too rushed and surface level for me to really be rooting for them as a couple. Oh yeah, but if people liked it, I'm really glad it worked for them. There were parts of it I liked. I also loved Jane. Mary Holland was so good in that movie, and she co-wrote it. Oh yeah, we can talk about cats. Let's do that. Welcome to Ineffable, a Cats movie podcast. This show is meant as a cozy exploration of the deranged motion picture that is 2019's Cats. Like the feeling of curling up next to the fire with a wool blanket and some hot cocoa. Only, that's not your mug. Where did this mug come from? And your wool blanket is orange, not blue. And you don't have a fireplace. Where are you? I'm your host, Joel Arnold, and with me is my co-host, Toast. We're back with another sporadic episode because that's 2020 in productivity for you. Plus, this chaotic release schedule is exactly what a movie like Cats demands. And because it's December, Cats season, we're coming up on 1 year of this movie being in our lives, a year since this critical inflection point in our culture. And has it not changed for the better? We owe so much to Cats, and it is finally getting some of the recognition it deserves. In Cats news, the song Beautiful Ghosts, written for the movie by Taylor Swift and Andrew Lloyd Webber, is nominated for a Grammy for Best Song Written for Visual Media. Sure, it's up against heavyweights like Into the Unknown from Frozen 2 and Billie Eilish's song for the next James Bond movie, but I am confident voters will listen to their hearts and probably choose another song they have a better emotional connection to and not the one that reminds them of cat-human hybrids. This episode, I talked with Sarah Mars, a film critic and gossip writer for LaineyGossip.com and co-host of The Hollywood Read, a podcast covering the entertainment industry that gives really sharp and funny analysis of film and TV news and overall makes that world feel more accessible. We actually talked back in April, but in pandemic times, that feels like last week and also 10 years ago. And our conversation about Cats was in terms of the movie's Oscar hopes. And that's just as relevant now because it's Oscar season, or it would be more of one in a normal year. But despite so many movies being pushed to 2021 and beyond, I hope you are enjoying some of the many great ones released this year. I really liked Palm Springs, I'm Thinking of Ending Things, and Yes, God, Yes. And looking at some of the year-end lists coming out right now, I'm realizing there are so many I need to catch up with, like Spike Lee's Defy Bloods, I still haven't seen it, The 40-Year-Old Virgin, both on Netflix if you haven't caught up with them yet, and I'm excited to see Minari, Promising Young Woman, Nomadland. Okay, you're right. I am reading off a list of titles from my notes app, and none of them are Cats. So let's get to my conversation with Sarah. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Joel.
Hey, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on to talk about Cats with me.
I'm super happy to talk about this movie that has demented an entire generation of fans.
Yeah, and it's so early in the time it can do that. So really, it's got a full life ahead of it. Like, I'm imagining in 20 years, when some people rediscover it, it will just infect. Well, that's not the right word for this time, but well, a new generation will discover and appreciate its wonders.
Will they? I don't know. I feel like it's either going to have a really long shelf life as a cult film, or it's just going to sort of drift into the ether of people realizing, no, it's really bad. Like, there's only so many times you can watch it before you're just like, it's so terrible.
That's an interesting take, because I am feeling the more I watch it, the more it becomes unfortunately normalized, and that's what I don't want to have happen. But that's at number, I think, 4 for me. How many times have you seen it?
Let me see. Well, I watched it once the whole way through with a critic screening, and then when it came out on rental a few weeks ago, I started trying to watch it because I was like, oh, I'll do like a revisiting thing. Could not get through it and just had keep stopping it and then watching it in like 20-minute increments because I just couldn't take it. It's, for me, it's physically awful to look at. I like physically can't get past the look of it. Uh-huh. So I just had to keep stopping it. So I've only made it through twice, but that second time just took like so much effort. And then the thing that sucks for me is I have really good recall. Mm-hmm. So there are bits of it that will, there is a car alarm.
It's okay. Nothing can ruin a conversation about cats, I feel, because it's already tainted.
But yeah, so I have really good recall, and there are moments when I will be doing something else and I will just have like a pop of cats in my brain of just like, oh, that is a thing that I saw and witnessed. And mm-hmm. it's in the memory vault forever and I will never get away from it. And it will just be there to haunt me for the rest of my life.
Do you remember any particular moments, the ones that pop in?
I like everything with Buster for Jones. Uh-huh. And then the moment, so a lot of Jenny Anydots too, like the moment when she peeled her skin off and then had like the same skin, but a tap outfit, that was very confusing. When she ate the cockroach was also pretty scarring. Anytime that I tried to like discern cat movement, like I got really, really freaked out about their feet because their feet are still human. And it's clear, especially Francesca Hayward, who is a ballerina, that she's dancing on point. But they don't show the ballet shoe. They just show her foot, like a bare human foot, but she's on point and it just doesn't, it's not a natural looking thing. So I got super hung up on the feet. So the feet like just pop into my mind. The cat that did the card tricks, they don't have opposable thumbs.
And ones that do, because once in a great while, I'll come across one on Instagram that has, I think only, I've, no, not once in a great while. Once in a great while, I'll see ones with like multiple toes, but I did see one, a cat with a thumb, and I would love to see him do a card trick. I think he'd be great.
And who had their wedding ring on? Was it Judi Dench?
Oh, yes.
That still had the wedding ring? That it was just like, what the? And like the human hands, just like, and then their human faces. Oh, those faces really do haunt me. And oh, Ian McKellen lapping at the milk.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Ian McKellen, like Sir Ian, lapping at the bowl of milk was so horrifying to me.
Well, that provides a perfect transition to one of the things that I wanted to talk with you about, the whole notion of this movie that now it's a little bit hard to remember, but that at one time this was intended as a prestige picture with this cast of Oscar-nominated and Oscar-winning performers, including Ian McKellen. And I wonder how much I think most of them, their careers will hold up enough that they can't be tainted by this. But it's jarring to think about the probable intention behind casting these people for their marquee value and what they would bring, and then seeing him admirably commit to lapping that milk, but now just reflecting on like, oh, you thought this was going to be one thing and it came out another one.
I mean, I remember those casting announcements. They were in all the trades, like big splashy announcements like Idris Elba, Taylor Swift, Judi Dench. And you were like, wow, they're assembling an A-list team. And then also, apparently, I've not seen the stage show, but I gather from people who have that they rearranged the movie's plot a little bit or the timing of the songs to clearly accommodate. Not all of those people were in the same room at the same time. They clearly only had some of those people for a few days, maybe a couple weeks. And they were accommodating to that. So it's like a huge effort to have this phenomenal cast. And oh my God, this will be the most embarrassing thing on their resumes for the rest of their lives. Like, what if this is the last, like, you know, God forbid anything happened, but what if this is the last thing that they do?
The like, last, you know, Judi Dench or Ian McKellen.
It just, oh, wow. It, yeah, I can't,
For some friends in a similar way, we were comparing notes on what was the last movie they saw in theaters, and ones who hadn't gotten out in a little bit, like it wasn't Invisible Man, it wasn't, well, I mean, I one of the last ones was, God forbid, like Fantasy Island, Blumhouse Presents, but theirs was Cats. Depending on your mileage, could be good or bad.
Oh, well, my last movie was Bloodshot, so I'm not sure I got out ahead. I'm not sure I did any better in the long run.
And how was that? Is it worth a rental?
No. Maybe okay. When the price goes down, but like the $20 premium rental, no.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, Cats was just, and you could see, like, it's Tom Hooper, who we now know, I mean, we knew before, he's not a great director. I guess maybe he's good with actors, but like visually, it's not there. I know Christy Puchko touched on just, it's not a well-made movie.
Yeah, and he's not making like the same mistakes he used to, but he's making bigger, different mistakes.
Entirely new imaginative mistakes. But he did like The Danish Girl and Les Miserables, and these were movies that were nominated for a lot of Oscars, that won Oscars. So you can kind of tell that they were thinking like, it's one of the most successful musicals in history. It ran for like 30 years on Broadway. It's Andrew Lloyd Webber. It's Tom Hooper. It's this A-list cast. This is going to be huge. And movie musicals, like with The Greatest Showman, they're kind of having a moment. So we're going to get an original Taylor Swift song. And it just didn't come together. And sometimes Oscar bait fails because, you know, it's trying too hard. It's a little too obvious. Like The Danish Girl comes to mind, where it's just too obvious. Mm-hmm. But Cats is like, at what point did they look at it and go, oh, shit, like, this is not anything like we thought it would be? Like, was it at the point that they saw storyboards or read a script and realized that the plot is just cats introducing themselves over and over again, that there's no story? I just can't imagine the time, the money, the people who were committed to this. Like, it didn't fail for lack of resources.
Yeah.
It's just mind-boggling.
And yeah, especially the visual effects artists come to mind. Laura Bradley had a really great piece. It was some important reporting on the butthole cut, but it also, writing for the Daily Beast, she also talked to VFX artists who explained more just like, you know, Tom Hooper's temper and the treatment of these artists working very long hours without appreciation, and also Tom Hooper seeming not to understand the visual effects process and asking them to put in rendering, you know, finishing effects for shots instead of sort of looking at the unfinished shots, and also that they had half a year. So what's wild is that Universal is pushing this with all these resources behind it. But I also, like you're saying, wonder when different people knew. When did production executives know? Because I can see like development executives being like, all for this storied, record-breaking Broadway property, wanting to have been adapting it for years, it almost happening. And then finally, you have this director who's ready for it. And Andrew Lloyd Webber is going to make a new song. Like, that all makes sense. But I wonder when the time was that the people at Universal knew, and if Tom Hooper ever knew until it was being released.
I mean, you can never truly know what goes on in someone's mind, but I have an experience with Pirates of the Caribbean. And when that was being made, and everyone at Disney thinking that they were shitting $100 million straight into the toilet, that there was no confidence. And they were convinced that it was a huge mistake, and they were just now contractually obligated to see it through to the end. Right. No one knew what Johnny Depp was doing. No one got it. And I remember like everybody thinking, we've made a terrible mistake, except for the PAs, the youngest people on the set with the least amount of Hollywood taint,
mm-hmm.
being like, no, it's like really cool what he's doing. He's like a rock star pirate. It's like what you, when you're a kid, it's like what you imagine a pirate to be. Like, that's what he's doing. But I do remember that, like, all the adults were like, oh, shit, what are we doing? And Johnny Depp and Gore Verbinski were like the only people who were like, yeah, no, we see something you don't see. And then, of course, it was a massive success. But it didn't happen until like the last moment, like at the last possible second, where it's like, oh, this is super strange and weird and we don't know what it is and it's messy and there's like whole plot threads that got cut in the edit, like just whole things that got dropped. And so I kind of feel like with Cats, because the nature of movie making can be so chaotic, and you're often pretending so much, especially with these big visual effects movies, that you're just like, oh, we don't really know what this is going to look like. And you're just trusting the process. And that when it comes together at the end, it will all pay off. So I kind of feel like with Cats, there might have been a sense of like, there's no story, there's no real characters, like all the normal pieces of a good narrative are not present. But I don't know, who knows? Maybe it'll all pay off when they're done doing their special magic computer things. And then, of course, it didn't. But you really don't know until the end how it's going to look, how it's going to play. So I kind of feel like people might have been going like, ugh, what is this? But then the dailies for a movie like that, they're fucking useless because you can't see what it is until the computer stuff is in place.
Yeah, I think that explains what goes on behind the scenes in the minds of like executives and people working on so many movies. I'm just thinking about my time at Fox, and I remember when I was working in creative content, and we saw there was a presentation that was given, I think, to, you know, like higher ups at Fox when Greatest Showman was being developed. And it was this 70-minute director's presentation. And eventually it was sort of cut together to be able to show like exhibitors or other like stakeholding parties. And it was the director's laying out of the story, like his PowerPoint, but also it would have animatics of the scenes. And I remember those songs, even though, you know, it's sort of these like Jimmy Neutron animated like kids singing to each other, that it was so compelling. And I was just like, from that, in tears. And I was like, okay, no, I can't really tell anyone, but in a year, this is going to be like the biggest movie. Musicals are back. And personally, I really didn't connect with the movie. And when I saw like early cuts, I was like, oh no, this is not what I hoped it would be, at least. But I think for me, the ingredients were there entirely that could have been like really a movie I connected with and felt warmed by.
So wait, in the end, did you like The Greatest Showman or?
In the end, I did not. I thought that the director's presentation was really good at laying out like the magic of the songs.
The dance numbers are really, really catchy.
Yeah. But I think the strength of that was, for me, story-wise, that could sort of like gloss over and just sort of give you the impression of the story. Whereas when I was seeing it fully laid out in the movie, I was like, oh no, Barnum's an asshole. And like the execution of the beats of how the story wanted to like make him this like he's kind of an asshole, but really he's such a good guy. I was like, no, this isn't bad.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like it's alchemy. Like you just don't know. Like every movie, good or bad, is a miracle because they're so hard to make. But when they turn out good, it's just like, holy cow. Like how did we do that? I mean, that was like the Pirates of the Caribbean thing of that moment when the final cut plays and the audience is losing their fucking minds and the kids are going bonkers. And you're like, how did they go from what I was seeing to this? It's always a little bit of a miracle. But Cats is like, I come from a real like story development perspective. And I really feel like somebody must have thought to themselves, there is no plot. And you will put up with stuff in a live show that you would never put up with in a movie or a TV show, because when it's live, it's a little bit just about the experience of seeing it happen and the stagecraft of it. And apparently Cats is like, it's very dance heavy. There's a lot of complicated big choreography numbers. So I can see where a live audience would perhaps get swept away in just the sort of magic of it happening right in front of their faces. Whereas when you're watching it in a movie, that doesn't exist. And so you're watching it and you're like, nothing is happening. They just keep introducing themselves.
Totally. There's no energy of performers like running down the aisles next to you for you
right,
to get like swept up in it.
In its own special way. Like, I'm not a musical theater person, but I kind of feel like somebody at the story development level, somebody in the script department must have been like, this is going to be a shit show because there's no anchor. Like there's just nothing to wait the whole process.
But I can even get into that mindset and think like, this doesn't really work this way, but maybe it's a spectacle. Maybe the performances will really carry it for me.
I can only figure that they must have been thinking that this digital fur technology would have been some kind of like James Cameron level revelation, that the technology would have been so breathtaking that we would have all been stupefied by it. And even though it's not like it's great, like Avatar is not great. Avatar barely has a plot, but it looks so good. It was such a fresh and unique experience in theaters that people were swept away by it. Well, Cats didn't. The digital fur is horrifying. The human faces on the cats' bodies is terrible. And it didn't have that swept away quality. Like, people are enjoying it for its ugliness. And that's the opposite. If you're talking about like, oh, we're going to spend all this money to make an Oscar movie, that's not the reaction that you want.
Yeah, I think that's some of the reactions that were coming out of CinemaCon speak exactly to that kind of, I think, hope for the movie. I was looking at the tone of coverage early April 2019, and this is when Universal, among other studios, like lays out for the National Association of Theater Owners for the year their big movies, like Hobbs and Shaw, which makes me appreciate that we had two charismatic performances with Idris Elba as a villain. So good job him last year. But they presented unfinished footage showing performers with the visual effects like motion capture dots on them. I think that was the first time that digital fur technology was spoken publicly. But this interview footage and behind the scenes footage were trying to create a sense of wonder. And the way that coverage talked about it was, it was really highlighting this before unused digital fur technology, like the impressive cast, the scope of the dance scenes and sound stages, because that was the first time we also saw the literal sizing of everyone. And there's also just a great contrast. It seems like in the official articles about what CinemaCon was showing, what Cats was looking like, it was like, oh, maybe this could be something. It's got all of these assets. And then on Twitter, a lot of the writers were like, this shit is looking bananas.
Well, it's a strange thing. Like, when you're a film critic and you just watch movies constantly, as much as you want to be like, oh, everything is potential, it's like, you know the warning signs. Like, you definitely know the warning signs. And the thing that tipped me at the beginning wasn't even the idea of the fur, because I was like, I don't know what that could be. It could be amazing. It was the proportions.
Mm.
It was the idea that like the scale didn't match anything. And I was like, oh no, that's a lack of communication. That's your construction department and your art department and your director having a breakdown. Like somewhere in that chain, something didn't get communicated because the scale is not consistent set piece to set piece. So there's a problem. And then you're like, all right, well, that's a pretty significant issue. But I have seen, like, I can see why CinemaCon wouldn't necessarily be a huge red alarm, because I've seen Marvel movies in various stages and they look fucking terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And you're kind of like, I don't know how this is gonna ever look like anything. And then you see it and you're like, oh no, Thor Ragnarok has like a great pop art palette and all of the colors got turned up in color timing and the contrast is really high and it's super poppy and bright and very pretty. Or you see like the end of Endgame and you're like, oh, I get it now. Like, okay, the scale, the scope, it all makes sense. Cats, though, the proportion, I was just like, there's a problem there, like a fundamental disagreement in what this is supposed to look like, which turned out in the final movie, like no one knows how big or little those cats are supposed to be in any given moment, because every set piece is different.
And you talk about Ragnarok, reminds me that I've seen since then some of the alternate versions of scenes from that movie that, maybe had like a small appearance in the trailer, like the version of Thor and Loki fighting Hela in New York versus over in Norway. Having seen those scenes now, like, oh yeah, they don't work as well. And I can just imagine like the idea of solving some of Kat's problems with reshoots, but there's so little story, it's hard to adjust that way. Like, the story isn't the problem thin as it is. And Toast is here. He's got a lot of input as well, of course.
Oh boy.
Here, let me grab him.
Well, it's interesting with Ragnarok. Like, they did reshoots. I mean, every big movie does, every movie does. But that scene with Hela, I'm pretty sure they just changed the backgrounds. I'm not sure they had to reshoot that in entirety, because they never went to Norway and filmed that. That's CGI.
Oh, yeah.
Which is why the CinemaCon people would be looking at Cats and be like, well, we know there's potential for this to look way better in the end, because we see these movies in progress all the time that just kind of look like shit, and then they turn out to be amazing. So it's not, I mean, Universal didn't pull the four-year consideration until, I think, the day after the movie opened.
Ah.
They were still holding on to hope, even as the reviews were coming out and were terrible. They didn't pull the FYC stuff until December 26th. So it wasn't until they knew that, like, no, audiences aren't going to embrace it. Because The Greatest Showman didn't get, like, overwhelmingly positive reviews either. And yet,
right.
It went on to be very successful. It got nominated for, I think, at least one Oscar, the music at least. But on December 26th, they cut it off their FYC website. They shut down all of the FYC spending. And it's just like, man, you really held out hopes that audiences would embrace Cats, that it would be bulletproof, but the critics had it right this time. Audiences did not flock to theaters for that.
That makes so much sense. Like, I can see now that impulse in that film and other films too, where even if you're sort of losing faith in, well, you don't see it yourself, but you think maybe other people are going to see it, or like a couple of us see it, maybe the public's going to have the same reaction as like a small segment of us. So I looked back at the casting announcements and just like the tenor of them. Can I give you a few tidbits of what they thought some of these casting like could result in?
Absolutely.
Okay. So there was some best supporting actor / actress speculation around, like, there was some chatter that Cats could be an opportunity for an Oscar given Tom Hooper's work on Les Miserables. And I think this was in the context of the Oscars with A Star is Born and Lady Gaga. This is from HollywoodLife.com, so take this with grains of salt dispensed from a catnip shaker. It says that a source close to the superstar said she will obviously continue her super successful career in music, but she worked so hard on Cats and it would be awesome if she got recognized for it with an Academy Award. Taylor is a planner and a dreamer, and she certainly hopes to entertain fans for a long time to come, but winning an Oscar would be the icing on the cake.
I mean, she did that whole song with Andrew Lloyd Webber, like, explicitly for a Best Original Song Oscar.
There was even speculation at one point that it could be, like, two nominations, that Taylor Swift was working on original song, but also that Jennifer Hudson could be working on original song as well. And to think that, like, the ingredients are there. If it had turned out a different way, it could have happened. Who knows?
Well, and you can see it with Jennifer Hudson, because she won Best Supporting Actress for Dreamgirls for basically that one song. And then Anne Hathaway won Les Miserables for basically the one song. And then Jennifer Hudson has the big memorable song from Cats. So, of course, people were kind of like, and could this be Jennifer Hudson's second Oscar? And it's like, she had a snot bubble the whole time. No one could pay attention because of the snot bubble. So, no.
I think that is, it makes a greater case for giving it to her, but I'm alone in that, and that's fine. There was another article, and I think this is not sort of coming from maybe the studio intention, but I think it speaks to what people would run, speaks to that these would be semi-plausible scenarios. Like, it's in that time, it wasn't so ludicrous to think that Ian McKellen, as one article speculated, that it's later in life, could be a Best Supporting Actor situation for Gus the Theater Cat.
No. But I do understand the roots of that, because Cats, people have asked me, like, why did they ever think Cats would be an Oscar movie? And it's like, Cats is one of the most significant, successful Broadway musicals of all time. Of course, you would think there's a potential for it to make that leap, because there was clearly an enthusiastic audience for the show, and it will translate. And it's like, but there's no story. Like, there's nothing to pay attention to. And they didn't, the dance numbers in the movie are so shambolic that you can't even get into that aspect of it. I guess Skimbleshanks maybe, but the rest of it, you're just like, what is even happening? It's just garbage in your face.
Yeah, there's a difference where they could have staged it, at least being able to see the choreography more. Yeah, I guess you're going to have to do something different with how they look, because it's hard to really get wrapped up in the spectacle of musical numbers when you're still looking at the way they look in their faces.
Yeah. And then when you do see their whole body, you're like, what the fuck is going on with their feet?
Yeah, it's hard unless you're seeing it for like the fourth time, or you have like taken an edible, for you to really get immersed and not be jarred out of it by any number of these things.
Mm-hmm.
The last little casting announcement tidbit was that, so Judi Dench was, it was announced in October 2018, which is about a month before production was slated to start, that she would be adding her pedigree to the already star-studded cast. And I saw a note that said in 2017, she had been speaking at a separate unrelated event, and she had spoken about her time when she was injured, which prevented her from appearing in the stage production. And she said, I went to see it and thought, I'm glad I wasn't in that.
And yet she did it anyway. But that kind of reminds me of Hugh Jackman just recently came out and said he was offered a role and he declined. And it's like, what did Hugh know that no one else knew?
And it could have been something where like a Doug Ray Scott was cast as Wolverine, and I'm sure he regrets it every day that he couldn't make that commitment happen.
Literally.
And like in a different reception, maybe he would have been like, oh, if only I could have had a 1-2 punch of musicals year after year.
Oh, man. But no, that was a good miss for him, because some people will walk away unscathed. Like, no one's going to hold this against Ian McKellen or Judi Dench. Some people, maybe Taylor Swift, probably James Corden, Rebel Wilson, like that mid-level, like Idris Elba might have to answer some questions. The ones I actually feel really bad for are Robbie Fairchild and Francesca Hayward, because they're not as well known in the film world. So I think they'll be fine in general, like they're successful, but in terms of crossing over into film, it might be a little harder now, because this is their calling card and it's not impressive.
That makes sense from what I would think of as like a conventional wisdom point of view, but I still have like my own brain's experience of it where I'm just like, they are the best part of the movie and Robbie Fairchild carries it. It could not work without what he did. So I hope that if anyone wants to cast him in the future, this is how far I've gone. I'm like following him on Instagram now, and he's doing some lovely Instagram live dancing on his roof, which he's able to do right now. And he's very talented, so I hope that people see that talent and cast him.
I mean, I think it'll work out in the long run, but this was not the breakout moment that I think anyone hoped for. And there might also be potential for this to be sort of like the Troll 2 of big budget Hollywood movie musicals, where there will always be an interest because there will be this cult following around it. And there will always be the ability to like drop in and do Q&As on midnight screenings and stuff like that.
Yeah, that would be cool. I hope for both of them. And also Laurie Davidson, who played Mr. Mistopheles, the magic cat. Yeah, I hope that like that would be cool for them. But I hope they have a career after this, too. Oh, I just did see a quote that I saved in the featurette that played at CinemaCon, which I think a version of it was later released to everyone in July. Tom Hooper said that at the center of this incredibly entertaining, comedic, fantastical musical, it's a very timely story about inclusion and redemption.
Is there, though? I mean, I definitely had a lot of questions about, like, why they were so mad at Grisabella.
Yeah, what do you think was there?
It seemed like just shaming sex workers. Like, it just seemed like they were mad at her because she went off with McCavity and became a sex worker. And I'm like, that's not very, you know, modern or enlightened of you. But other than that, I'm like, what did she do that's so terrible? Like, is it really this? Are the Jellicle cats, who seem really horny, are they this puritanical that they're mad at the sex worker cat?
Yeah, because it's just a line of like, before she went off with McCavity, and Munkus Trapp does that sort of like, you know, and I don't know. Does he have like a usual consort? Because not all of his henchmen are glamour cats, sexy lady cats, I guess. Like Taylor Swift seems to be the new Grisabella. So I don't know if like participation in villainy is the thing. I can't imagine it is because everyone's so horny.
I mean, it just really seemed like they were mad at her for going off and being like a disco cat.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't get it. Like, you're all these weird cats and you're mad at the disco cat who might be a sex worker. There wasn't really much redemption in the end because it was like she just went off to commit suicide.
Yeah. And the redemption, I would think it would need to go the other way. I find that there's enough in just like the looks of Mungus Trap and Cassandra, the gold-toothed, very judgy cat. But it's them who are wrong to judge her because she's, from Victoria's perspective, as we see in their songs and in memory, like Grisabella was right all along. She didn't change to be redeemed, which is tough because we don't know what she did, and she didn't do a lot to be redeemed from it. So maybe if she was right, then everyone else should show a little more contrition then and change your judgments.
And it seems like if it was really about like redemption and acceptance, the whole point would not be send her off to Baloo to die. It would be embrace her back in the community and make her part of this little feral cat colony where she has a home again. Like, it would be the opposite of going off. They should send McCavity off to die. He seems to be a very toxic presence in their community.
Yeah. They've got this power, this tool that they've chosen to use for social betterment for a cat. I'm not sure if they could use it more often than once a year, but that's when they choose to use it. And instead, they have this like warped mindset where they don't validate someone's existence and say, you are accepted by us. Go on being who you are. It's
no, they're basically saying like, you have fucked up too much to ever come back from it. Yeah. Why don't you go die and try again in your next life? And it's like, that's very dark.
And they make it aspirational because I don't see a lot wrong with not to the McCavity degree of like Skimbleshanks and Rum Tum Tugger. Like, they don't need to die and be reborn. Like, I understand Bustopher Jones has his own warped reason of just wanting to get fat again. But like, I don't know, your life seems pretty good now.
See, I thought at the beginning that this was going to be, because I know it's based on T.S. Eliot's book, the nonsense poems. And I thought there would be like some biblical connection of like, oh, the cats are going to represent like the seven deadly sins and like this, the passion cycle of Christ of like suffering and being reborn. No, not really. That's not really there. But it was just, I never understood the point of going off and dying when it's like, if you're trying to make this about acceptance, you should be embracing her back in your community. And it was very strange. It was just a very, very strange movie.
Yeah. It's a weird place to end it because like it was weird when I see her smile so big. I'm like, that's she's not, because she's not smiled all movie. And it's a weird expression on Grisabella's face, but I can't buy in. Because she's smiling that she gets to finally go die now.
Yeah, it's really, I don't know. Like, do cats just long for death? Is that like what they're doing all day?
Some of these do. And honestly, you know, McCavity, maybe it would be a reward for him. But I think Gus, he made a pretty good case. He's lived a long life. He's a little bit sad.
Yeah, Gus, Skimbleshanks, I don't know what he was doing there. Because he seems like he has a job. Like, he's the railway cat, he's keeping the mice. I assume what his job really is keeping the mice off the train. It's a very practical job. That's a very necessary job in what has to be a rodent-ridden London. And I'm like, what are you doing here trying to die? Because you're employed.
Yeah. I wonder if it's kind of a thing with some of these cats where they, if they want to maintain good standing within Jellicle society, that they need to perform this, or if it's just a way to show off who they are. And maybe they could, because they don't seem like so disappointed that they didn't make it. I mean, Gus maybe a little bit, but like Skimbleshanks is okay.
Gus seemed pretty bummed. Gus didn't seem like he had a lot to live for anymore. Gus is pretty dark if you think about it.
Yeah.
Well, it just, the Jellicle cats, like, besides not understanding their point, I'm pretty sure they're a death cult and they're all worshiping a death god. That's like why they're showing up. It's not that they really want to die. It's that they're worshiping at the altar of a death god. And they're basically saying, I don't want to die, but I will if it's what you choose for me, because we worship you. And it's like, what is happening? Like, are these cats the minions of Asmodeus? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. And for someone who has some rich themes in his musicals, including ones about Jesus, I love the anecdote where Andrew Lloyd Webber had to explain that there's There's not more to this. It's about cats.
But you want it to be about more.
Yes. Yes.
Because they're hinting at, like with Grisabella, they're hinting at there is a backstory. There's a history. Something has happened. There's been an occurrence. And we're just not given any of that information, which is so frustrating for an audience to be like, okay, clearly something has happened here. Now tell us about it. And they're just like, no, she's just like really sad. Maybe a sex worker, probably a disco cat. But like, I was just trying to decode it the whole time. I was like, what is this doing? Like, I didn't like The Greatest Showman, but I understood what it was trying to say. Like, I got the arc of it.
Right.
But this, I'm just like, this is the most frustrating thing I've ever sat through because it's ugly to look at and there's no story. And I also don't understand the motivation of half of these characters.
Yeah, it wants to sort of have these broad ways of telling a story with broad characters, but so many of them are not, one, because they're cats, and questions are just generated by some of these like archetypes being cats, the implications, and then some of them are so specific that they're no longer archetypes, and then whatever is trying to be communicated is, in fact, lost. Like, knowing that Rumpelteazer and Mungo Jerry are thieves... Okay, that's something, but their whole song is about like where they live, where they operate, what kind of jobs they do not have, and you've spent time with them, but then it ends up coming to nothing because their whole introduction is not meaningful to the story that's been constructed around cats.
Right, and also, are they romantically involved? I know they're brother, sister, cat, but like, is it a Targaryen situation with those cats? Because again, they're super horny, and it just seemed like those two cats were like really into each other. They're like, we're brother and sister, but like also on the side. Yeah. And it's like, what is happening with these cats?
I feel like that's a great time to just like break open the horny Pandora's box of cats and like talk about the relationships. I was like trying to do like a mapping and I was curious for you. Did you? Well, first of all, OK, I don't know. I'm guessing no, because you did not connect with a lot of these cats. Did you have personally any cats crushes?
Crushes? No. When I saw the first trailer, though, I did think, like, Jason Derulo is so good looking and so sexy that even cats could not dim his appeal.
Mm.
And the Taylor Swift cat is strangely alluring, mainly because they didn't flatten her chest the way that they did all the other female cats.
Yeah.
So she has the most distinctly, like, humanoid shape. Where you're like, Taylor Swift is just a long, tall drink of water and she's a beautiful woman. And again, like even this is not quite dimming that light from her. But mostly I was just really repulsed by it all. And I didn't think you could make Idris Elba unattractive, but you can.
Was he unattractive to you the entire time or just when he lost the coat? Oh, okay.
It was the whole time. It was worse when he lost the coat, but it was the entire time. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. Let's start with him. Do you see any relationships? Like, I think it's implied that he went with Grisabella. He's with Bumble Arena now, but I don't know. The vibe I get from him is more like a professional partnership, maybe.
Well, he's definitely a pimp. Like, the styling, like when he's in the coat and he has the jewelry and the hat, like he's a pimp. Like, he's a pimp cat.
Why have I not put that together? Of course he's a pimp.
So it is a professional partnership because he's her pimp. And I did really love Kaylee, my co-host for the Hollywood Read, shared this with me, that it was Taylor Swift's father's idea that she sprinkled a catnip in that one scene. And I was like, this is how crazy this movie is, that I don't know his name, Tom Swift or whatever, was like interjecting one of the better ideas in the movie is when they all get hit with the catnip and you're like, oh, this is like fun. It wasn't. It didn't work out. I thought it'd be like a jazzy sequence like in Moana when they go to the big sparkly disco crab. It didn't go that far, but the idea was there.
I wonder now that I fully realized what his outfit is implying. So Munkus Trap has this judgment, like who are the clients? Are any Jellicles? Who are the other cats who would go to them then?
See, I had questions about like, how do the Jellicles relate to just like normal cats? And like, what's the difference? Because it seems like at the beginning, they're treating Victoria as if she's just a normal cat. And at the end, they're like, no, you're a Jellicle cat. I'm like, okay, was she a Jellicle cat all along? And you had to like tease that trait out of her. Do you become a Jellicle cat because you like commit to this weird lifestyle of the death cult? Like, what does it take to be a Jellicle cat? How do they relate to other cats? Is what is McCavity doing with his cats that qualifies him as a pimp? Like, is it sex work for normal cats? Is that why they look down on them? Because they're having relations with like lesser beings? I mean, none of that's explained, but all I could kind of figure is that they must be doing, like, he must be pimping them out to like normal street cats. And they're like, oh, you've lain with like lesser beings than us.
Oh, that's like, interesting.
Is there like a hierarchy here?
Yeah, like classes of cats with Jellicles at the top. Like, in what you were saying, like whether or not she already is a Jellicle or becomes a Jellicle. Like, I read it as sort of they're a self-styled group that they call themselves the Jellicles. But honestly, I don't see a lot in like what a Jellicle cat is that is different from just like, That's what regular cats are. And it gives me the impression that there's this group of cats and knowing they don't have the internet, they don't have a greater context for themselves in the world, that they have just said like, ah, what makes us special is that we feel when there's a chill in the air. We are special because, you know, cats once sat on the thrones of kings, or like we go with witches. I'm like, no, that's all cats, but they wouldn't know that.
But I also feel like there might be across the street, just out of frame where we can't see it, just a bunch of like normal alley cats watching the Jellicle cats, just being like, these fucking morons. Like
they're so special.
Like, does every feral cat colony think that they're special in their own unique way? And the Jellicles are just the feral cat colony that live around this one specific alley. But if you went over to like the sports stadium, there'd be a different cat colony, and they think they're special because they're sport cats and they're singing songs about sports all day.
Oh, yeah. I would love to see that. And yeah, when you were saying Victoria is like, she becomes a Jellicle, I was thinking like, yeah, Rey connects to the Force, but she's no one. And that's a beautiful idea. But secretly she was a Palpatine. Like, what if Victoria came from like a line of Jellicles? It's like, it's the cat midichlorian count, and she like found her people. It was destined.
Oh my God. In this one regard, cats is better than Star Wars.
Yeah, that's right. She came and they saw her for her own talents. She didn't need to be anyone's grandchild.
Well, and here's the weird thing about Victoria. Why did her human throw her out? This is why I think Jellicles must be different from regular cats in this world, because Victoria is a beautiful little white cat. And I couldn't understand why you would cast such a beautiful little cat out unless it's like a freak cat doing weird shit, like crawling on the ceiling that you can't explain. You're like, this is a demon cat. It must be removed from my home. So that's the only reason I can think that Jellicles must be unique among cats, and they must look down upon other cats as lesser beings who don't have the same awareness of the world. Like, does a regular alley cat know that they once sat on the lap of kings, or do only Jellicles have that memory?
Yeah, like they are the chosen cats and they have like this long tradition. But oh boy, what you just made me think of is that what if these other alley cats, I pictured them as these kind of cats, indistinguishable physically, but what if they're just like regular cats? And
yeah,
this woman's like, oh shit, we got one of the freaky Jellicle ones. Gotta throw them in that alley where those weird cat human hybrids live.
Like, that's what I was thinking when I saw the movie the first time and they threw Victoria out, and I'm like, oh, but she's like a really pretty cat. And then I was like, but does she have that face all the time? Like, can humans see that face? And they're like, fuck no, get out of my house. Like,
it would be, there's a hairline of possibility, because we see enough of the woman who throws her out that it's not just like a hand. We see like, I think like her in profile a little bit, at least maybe in the nose on down. I'm just like, human face. Like, I understood she would be human, but can't you see what your cat is?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, do they appear as normal cats to everybody and they just look that way to each other? Or do they just look like that? And so when you have one, you're like, ugh, I don't want to be around it because it's repulsive.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't know why they threw Victoria out. She seemed really nice. She seemed like a very good cat.
Yeah, she seemed pretty. That's legitimately the way I feel about my cat Toast, because like, he's this pretty like white and creamy cat where I'm just like, this is like a ragdoll. It's not meant to be out in the wild, and he's so sweet. Why would you ever get rid of him? And I don't know, maybe so charitably, I guess the family, as all of the songs refer to the cats as, which I think in the musical maybe references one family, I'm not sure, but the family that gets rid of Victoria Who? Hang on again. Okay, I'm stopping now because she had a name. They named her. The unfulfilled journey of Victoria is that she never gets to name herself by the end.
No, we never find out what her Jellicle name is.
Yeah. So she was given a name by humans. They must have had her for a little while. What did she do?
Well, here's what I can't understand, because I have a very beautiful cat and she's a fucking nightmare.
Oh, what's your cat's name?
Pancake.
Oh, Pancake.
So I can't understand that maybe she doesn't have that horrible hybrid face. Maybe to humans, she just looks like a normal cat and they were taken in because she is so pretty. But then her behavior is just like, oh, she's intolerable. We can't handle her. Let's get rid of her. I can see that. But then she doesn't act that way around the other Jellicles. She just seems like a really good cat.
And maybe it's something where, I don't know, the cats who we would imagine to be just assholes, the cats in the movie that we would imagine to be real jerks to humans are like nice. You know, there could be a switch, like your cat is so nice to you, but does not get along with other cats when they meet them, like that happens. So I wonder if McCavity, I don't know, maybe McCavity has a home and like he's well taken care of and he's like just super chill with his owner.
Well, if McCavity has an owner, he's definitely, well, see, that's the thing, is like some of the cats had collars, like Bombalurina had a collar. So I assume that means that she belongs to someone, and McCavity has like seduced her out of the home at night to frolic like tomcats will do. But I'm like, if McCavity's hanging with a person, he's definitely hanging with like a criminal. He's not hanging with a good person. He's definitely hanging with an unsavory element, because he's unsavory.
So you think he got it from, he was influenced? Because yeah, well, I don't know whether that evil is.
I'm still confused on how the Jellicles develop their personalities, like where it comes from. Why does Mr. Mistopheles want to do magic? Was he raised by a magician?
Yeah, the whole issue of magic, I don't know where McCavity's comes from. I don't know where Mistopheles has come from. I don't know if it's the same as the magic that allows a cat to go into the sky, where I personally do not believe they are reborn. They just die.
Yeah, no, they're definitely idiots for thinking there's an afterlife.
Yeah. They're fucking dumb.
They're definitely just going to die. I kept kind of waiting for like a meta moment where they cut to Grisabella in the balloon and it ceased to be like a beautiful balloon. And it was just like they tied her to in a basket with like a regular balloon. And she was clearly going to die.
Yeah, I just want like the end of Michael Clayton holding on her face, or just like the faces at the end of
The Graduate.
Yes, The Graduate. I just want like the dawning realization. Just looking down, she's so far from Earth. It's getting cold.
Yeah, like, oh,
it's getting
fuck.
Dark.
I didn't actually want to do this. Yeah,
this was a bad idea. In terms of relationships, where do you see Monkus Trap? I'm curious, because I initially saw something with Victoria before she went with Mistopheles.
That's the Robbie Fairchild cat, right?
Yes.
Okay, I definitely thought there was a love triangle. Like, I thought he was for sure into Victoria, and she was maybe, like, feeling it out. And then she met Mr. Mistopheles, and he could do card tricks. And she was like, okay, that's cool, because she has terrible taste, clearly. And, yeah. And then in the end, she's, like, with Mr. Mistopheles. But it did seem like there was a love triangle there, and I haven't checked the fan fiction community, but I bet there's a three-way tag for that relationship.
I've started to, because I was like, well, that's got to be an episode. I just need to, like, get to know the whole genre. And the only thing I read so far was someone writing a piece from the point of view of the cats, where they have made, and this is around when the trailer came out, they've made the trailer, they see the trailer, hey, they're making a story out of our story, and McCavity like rounds up everyone to be like, we're gonna watch the trailer together. Which I might have to just like read for an episode. I will get permission, but I hope that they let me.
I have to imagine, though, that Mungo whatever and Victoria and Mr. Mistopheles are an OT3, because that's really how they seem in the movie. Like it seems like both of those cats are interested in her, and she seems pretty interested in both of them. And like, does monogamy matter to cats?
Yeah, does it?
I mean,
we see a wedding ring that I'm choosing to believe it's in the movie. It must be canon now for old Deuteronomy. But yeah, there's nothing explicit about whether cats need to stay with one cat.
I mean, they don't in the wild. Some cats have mates that will stick around for a while. But, you know, like a lion pride, there's no monogamy there. So it's like, are they like lions? Or, and like, that's McCavity's thing, is he's like building a pride. that competes with the Jellicles? Is that the problem? Or are they like tigers and mountain lions where they'll come back to the same mate over and over again for a while? I don't know. I mean, again, like just huge question marks about all of this. But I definitely read those three as like a mutual admiration society.
Yeah, I can see that. And I still find it so weird that McCavity positions himself as against the Jellicles, but still, like, he's definitely a former Jellicle where he's not rebelled completely because he still submits himself to the Jellicle choice because he still believes in it. Like, even if he's jaded and doesn't want to follow all the rules of the Jellicles, he's still like, choose me, please. I still want old Deuteronomy's affirmation.
Yeah, I would like to know the power that old Deuteronomy has over all of them. Is that like something to do with the fur coat that she wears? Has she killed and skinned all of her rivals and that's why they all bow down to her?
And how much of it is like familial? Because I think the implication from the movie, and I think that's backed up by the stage show, is that Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer, the twins, are her either children or grandchildren. And I don't know how many of them all are that, because she is said to have lived 99 lives, so she's very old. They could all be just her offspring, and maybe that... Oh no! That's where Victoria comes in! She's secretly a grandchild.
She's one of the cast-off kittens, but that also means that the whole thing is a very Targaryen situation.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the two thief cats definitely act like spoiled brats coming from money. Like, they have that air about them of like, oh, we're delinquents, but like, daddy will bail us out of jail.
Yeah.
So it makes sense to me that they would be related to old Deuteronomy because they act like they're a little bit untouchable in the hierarchy. And that would be granted to them by being protected by this bond.
That makes sense because it's not just like they are criminals the same way McCavity is, but they don't have any of the signs of it. Like, they've got protection from somewhere. They're still Jellicles. I'm sorry. Grisabella gets cast out, yeah. But they work for him.
There's really like no way to read the Grisabella situation that just doesn't come back around to some kind of puritanical sex shaming.
Yeah.
And that's not very like that whole like, oh, this is about acceptance. It's like, it's not really.
Mm-hmm. And it also seems that their acceptance of her is, it's an individual case and one that cannot be long lasting. I can see them forgetting the importance of this event quite easily if the presence of it, like, is gone. Like, she's gone, out of sight, out of mind. They don't need to do any of the work of continuing to live with her and showing their continued support.
Well, and why are they okay with Bombalurina? Like, they're all partying in her little party shack, inhaling her catnip. They all seem pretty cool with her.
Well, I think that they don't want to be inhaling it. It's sort of against their will. They become like entranced by her spell. But I don't know where she goes at the end. She disappears because like McCavity grabs her and he's like, let's go. And she disappears from the movie. Taylor Swift had to leave, basically.
Taylor Swift was done. She gave him a 2-week max and then she was out. I feel like this could have easily been like a 10-part HBO miniseries where we really get into the lives and connections of these cats. Because these are all the questions that I have.
Yeah, none of this is... None of this is a result. I answered a question for myself when I was like, who does Bustopher Jones? I was like, no, his only love in life is food. I think that is clearly established.
Yeah, he's, and again, like, I really thought there'd be a Seven Deadly Sins thing and he would be gluttony and the cats would be stealing, obviously. But he is repulsive. Like, all of them are hard to look at, but Bustopher Jones was especially difficult. And it's not even about James Corden. Like, I think with anybody in there, it was just, he was really hard to look at.
The proportions are strange, like how they show that he has weight. Like, Grimace comes to mind, the McDonald's character, just like with how unnatural a little bit of sort of the way his like bottom half and like legs go. Because he's also a very nimble dancer, and that's lovely for him.
It's also gross to watch people eat on screen. Like, I'm not a huge fan of that. Some people can kind of work it, like Brad Pitt's constantly eating on screen. But the way that Corden was just like leaning in and gnawing on things was really disgusting to me. And it just made it worse. I'm like, this is already bad. And then there's something about his whole character design that's especially bad. And then the eating is worse. It was just like every terrible level possible.
I don't know why, but whenever I think of like him eating a picture, especially him with like a full cooked lobster and him like cracking into that, and it doesn't feel good.
Oh, there's my cat.
Hey!
She's awake. I don't know. The character design, like some of the cats almost kind of worked. Again, like Jason Derulo cat and Taylor Swift cat and Victoria cat, like Francesca Hayward cat was not horrible to look at. But some of them, a growl tiger was also really hard to look at and made me feel terrible for Ray Winstone. And it was just, some of them were really, and the Idris Elba cat just takes the cake because he pulled off his jacket or his coat and he somehow looked more naked with the fur. If he had just been naked, just regular human naked, he would not have looked as naked as he looked in Cats. And that was really upsetting.
Yeah, it's hard to describe what it is about that, because I don't think that it's just the change. If he had not been wearing the coat the entire time, I think there's still something off-putting about it. And the rest of the cats are the same way. So I don't know if it's the shine.
Maybe. Or maybe it's the way that like his human muscles show through the fur. Like he's very clearly got like abs and pecs and a biceps. And it's like, it's really disconcerting. It's kind of the same as like the human feet when they're dancing on point, where it's like, that's just not, that just doesn't go. Like, that's not what I want to see ever. I just keep like, this is a podcast so people can't see, but I just keep like staring off into the distance. like I'm traumatized by this movie.
Okay, now I can put a few more moments into context. Sometimes, you know, you can't tell where the webcam is versus, and I'm just like, ah, no, that's just being mesmerized and taken
just,
away by
I'm just
cats.
Like having flashbacks and like staring into the middle distance of nothing.
Okay, well, to dial back in, I have prepared a game and it is a classic fuck, marry, kill with some of the cat's characters.
Oh, no.
That I would like to participate in with you. What do you say to the following? Growl Tiger, Bustopher Jones, and Grizzabella.
Oh, God. Okay. Can I kill more than one?
Ooh, I'm going to do this too, and it'll be painful. So I'm going to say no.
Okay. Well, I have to kill Bustopher Jones because he's repulsive. I guess I'll fuck Growl Tiger. It'll never leave me. It will haunt me for the rest of my life. It will be a very regrettable night. And then I'll marry Grizzabella because I just don't understand what she did wrong. She seemed like a perfectly good cat.
Yeah, I think, I mean, she's going to, I hope she has the emotional tools once she's healed on her own to help you through being with Growl Tiger.
I'm going to need a lot of counseling.
Yeah, I will marry her as well for the same reason that, like, I think she's pretty sweet. She's all right. Grizzabella innocent. I'll go the same way. I try to for variety's sake, I try to go the other way, but Bustopher Jones would incorporate food. That's not me personally. So
he's
I don't
a
wish to do
for
that.
Sure, and like no kink shaming, but that's not my kink, so I don't want to get into it.
Yeah. And there are people who would be interested, I'm sure. So, yeah, I'll be with Growl Tiger, who's, you know, maybe when he's not on the barge and not under McCavity's influence, maybe he could be sweet. Okay, so I have another one. Only five of these. If we can, maybe we can make it through. I don't know. Okay. So this is like the hottie one, I think. This is Mr. Mistopheles, Monkus Trap, and Rum Tum Tugger.
Okay, well, definitely fucking Rum Tum Tugger. I would just Jason Derulo in that costume.
Oh, yeah. But I can see why also he's not marriage material because he's very, you know, he's back and forth.
No, because he's a prowler. I would marry Mr. Mistopheles because he seems like very, so he's trying to have a job. Like he's out here trying to gain employment. So it seems like that would be like a good home situation. And I guess just by default, kill Monkus Trap, but I feel kind of bad because he also didn't seem that bad.
Yeah, I think I'll throw him my... Well, I'm not going to throw him the bone, but I'll throw him a bone. I think I will kill Rum Tum Tugger because I'm sure I'm missing out on a fantastic night. But I think Mistopheles would be like very kind, very, very attentive in bed. Fuck him. And then Monkus Trap, I think, would be like the most, like, I wouldn't need as, I mean, I see myself in Mr. Mistopheles. With needing like affirmation. So I wouldn't have to give like him reassurance all the time. And like Monkus Trap like is secure in himself. I think that could be really like he's got this like strong leadership quality. I was like, yeah, he's very attractive. He's got it together. Marry him.
I can see it.
How about Bumble Arena, Victoria, and Cassandra?
Well, I'm definitely going to marry Victoria because again, she just seemed like a really good cat. And Also, she needed a home, so just like give her a warm place to stay. Pancake is choosing Bombalurina.
Okay.
Because she was also like Jason Derulo, kind of a weirdly hot cat. And then I guess I'll kill Cassandra because I honestly don't really remember who she is.
Your cat agrees. I will do the same thing and kill Cassandra because she is the one who is just so mean to both Grisabella and to Victoria. Hisses at Grisabella, like gets up in Victoria's face, like, who are you? Get out of here. And I'm not saying she deserves to die. She comes around a little bit at the end, but in this game, she would have to go. And I think Bumbleorina, I mean, yes, Wild Knight, but I don't think maybe she's not inherently bad. Maybe she just got taken in the same way that Grisabella did and that there's a good heart there. Okay, what about these men, McCavity, Skimbleshanks, and Gus the Theater Cat?
No, poor Gus.
He pull either of us?
Okay, I'm going to kill McCavity. I'm going to fuck Skimbleshanks. And I'm going to marry Gus the Theater Cat. Aww. Because I feel like this will be like a Black Widow situation. Like, I'll marry him. And he probably has secret old man money stashed away somewhere that I can get my hands on. And then I will just poison him gently so that he passes quietly in his sleep and is set free of this life that has begun to torture him in his old age.
I like that. So a marry and to kill. And yeah. But it's what he needs. Like, he's got palsy. He's got so much wrong with him. I bet there are tons of undiagnosed diseases for the poor guy. I think this time I will, yeah, I'll fuck McCavity for the chaotic Wild Knight it could be. And honestly, I'd probably be disappointed because I think he's all talk, but I'll give it a shot. Then I would marry Skimbleshanks because again, real stable. Like, he's committed to his job, but also I feel like in his personal life would not let anything go wrong between us. And then, yeah, kill Gus. Do it real nice, obviously, but like, he will be at peace.
Take him to the vet and put him down gently.
Yeah. All right, the last one. This is, yeah, they're all rough. This is Jenny Annie Dots, the Gumby cat, Old Deuteronomy, and Mungo Jerry or Rumpelteazer. You get to pick, or both. I don't know. Whatever. Both.
Okay. Well, I'm definitely killing Jenny Annie Dots because she eats cockroaches. So no. I'm gonna marry Old Deuteronomy. Because I also think there's like an old person secret cash hoard in play that you could like get a hold of. Although there's probably a lot of children and grandchildren and they would be very suspicious and everything would get tied up in probate.
Oh, but like, yeah, yeah, yeah. They'd be all after the money too. Gus?
Gus has no one, so it would be very easy.
Yeah. I wonder. Yeah, he has definitely got no one. You know what? It would make sense if he had some money or like maybe... I don't know. He is a struggling actor. Maybe Old Deuteronomy like gives him an allowance. I don't know. It seems like they fucked at one time.
Oh, they definitely have. Victoria is their secret grandchild. Like, she's the product of,
yeah,
like their love child's child.
Secret Kenobi.
And then I would definitely have a twofer with Rumpelteazer and that other one. And just see what the Targaryen flavor is like.
Yeah, like he doesn't seem Viserys level abusive. Maybe that's more Rhaegar. Like, I think he's one of the good ones. The coin flip went in his favor. For me, let's see. I think we're on the same page. I'd kill... Okay. I would kill Jenny Antidotes. Fuck Old Deuteronomy. Not because marriage with her wouldn't be very pleasant, but... I think I'm interested in the longevity maybe of Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer. Never been a thruple. I'm open to it. I am more attracted to her than I am to him, but I can manage with whatever her needs are. And yeah, I think Old Deuteronomy would, like, she lifts her leg up. I saw it. She's got game. She would ruin me, I'm sure.
She's had 99 lives to get it right.
Yeah, all that experience. Wow, yeah.
This is way more than I ever thought about fucking the cats.
Me too. This has gone places I didn't think it would. Oh, boy. Do you have just to leave no stone unturned, do you have any moments from the movie that really just like resonated with you or broke you that you can't unsee that will haunt your dreams?
Nothing really resonated in a good way. I do genuinely wish that the cinematography, and I don't want to blame the director of photography because I think it's all Tom Hooper, but I do wish that the filming of Skimbleshank's dance number had been better because I feel like it was probably really good. And you just can't appreciate it. You can't see enough of it to appreciate it. That kind of sticks with me as like, I wish I had seen that better because I think it was probably really good. But mostly I'm just haunted by their faces and their hands and their feet. And whatever's happening around Buster for Jones's middle, that is, he looked like a Weeble, like those Weeble wobbles.
Yes,
they don't fall down.
That's what it is. Better than a grimace, he was a Weeble.
He looked like a Weeble with legs. It was upsetting. And I think I'm just going to forever be haunted by the questions of like, what is a Jellicle? What did Grisabella do? Do real cats exist? Do they know what Jellicles are different from them? Like, those questions are just going to keep coming back to me because it is so unsatisfying to be introduced to a world that has apparently quite a lot of backstory and you just don't get any of it. It's like a huge tease.
It's at a level where like I want a George R.R. Martin, like the world of the Jellicles, have a history cat go back and tell me the tale of this world and show me the far off reaches of London and the other cats, like the sports cats, tell me about their lives. Like there are whole races of people that we hear all about in George R. R. Martin's ephemera that never come up in the show. But like that's the level of answers that I want.
Yeah.
Because so much is conjured and asked that, like, it's the kind of thing where you're like, ooh, I got a good taste of this, like, YA fantasy movies world. Give me more now. There's more coming because you planned it. And, like, there can't be any more of this.
No. I'm also going to be really haunted by Judi Dench looking dead into camera and saying, a cat is not a dog.
Yeah.
Which is so weird.
The last time I watched, I maintained eye contact. And that was, like, I'd never done it before. Four watches. It took me to get there because I always look at Munkus Trap. He was doing stuff. It was cool. A lot of acting. And I couldn't maintain eye contact with her. And now I did. And off-putting.
She really means it. Like they were giving this movie Razzies earlier this year. And I genuinely don't think it deserves Razzies because the level of commitment that everyone was showing in the face of sheer insanity. But Judi Dench's commitment to a cat is not a dog is like, it's magnificent, really. It's bonkers. It's insane.
Yes. And it's commitment too, because of the many things I want on my list is also seeing that scene, seeing the whole movie with no visual effects. I've seen it from like Robbie Fairchild's Instagram, Judi Dench hanging out in her motion capture suit. And it's real weird. It's real weird. So she's not even like having the aid of like, okay, I am a cat right now. I'm a cat who is delivering the speech, the leader of the cats. She's like in this like beige, loose, kind of looks like a prison uniform maybe. And to have to conjure all of what they're able to in that is, people do it all the time for Avatar and whatnot. But there's a wider gulf between the ultimate ends for this. Like, it's not even like the operatic nature of Star Wars. It's cats.
Yeah, it's just, I'm just like replaying moments in my mind of like, it's real. Like, it happened. Hundreds of people made this happen. And so far, no one has lost their job over this. That was kind of amazing to me that like no one got fired over this.
I do want to ask, where do you think Tom Hooper goes from here? He could be the only one that might suffer.
I mean, I don't think he'll suffer very long, not nearly as long as he should. He should never direct a movie or anything ever again. Like, this should be the moment that we all go, oh, he's not a good director. Cool. But I feel like he's probably, and he's already directed some stuff for His Dark Materials on HBO. But I feel like he'll probably direct some prestige TV pilot or something, and it will do well. And then he'll have a movie again.
No matter how much money this lost.
And it would be a significant amount. But I don't think he's going to like sit in director's jail as long as some people have. Because he does have that track record of like, oh, this was The Miss. But he did do The Danish Girl and Les Miserables. It's like, well, those are also not good movies that weren't well directed. So.
Yeah, in retrospect, we should have seen this coming. Awesome. Well, this has been a riveting, I was going to say, just enthralling This was a very good time. Thank you for talking about cats with me.
Thanks for having me.
That was gossip and film critic Sarah Mars, and I hope you enjoyed our discussion as much as I did. Though I don't know if that's possible, as it's so thrilling to learn there are still new and freshly disturbing aspects of this movie waiting to be uncovered. You can find Sarah on Twitter at Cinesnark, and I highly recommend her podcast, The Hollywood Read. Now, in previous episodes, when we've gone on to the next segment, we've stayed local. Talked about some California cats, a New York cat, a southern gentleman of a cat. But now, we're leaving the United States and going international as I make the Joelical choice. Each episode, I highlight an enchanting, engaging feline friend and talk to their person. And today, I am speaking with Al Xavier, all the way from New Zealand, about his cat, Queen Elizabeth. Al Xavier, hello.
Hello.
Hi, I'm excited to talk with you about your cat, Queen Elizabeth the Purd.
Yes.
I was tickled when you just told me that. So if you could describe what your cat looks like for the listener, we would love to hear about her.
She's just a cat. Like, she's not a specific breed or anything. She's, I guess, a domestic long hair, like a calico, like the three color cat. Very long, like, face hair. And she's very friendly once you get to meet her, but most of my family have never actually seen her in person because as soon as the front doors open, she just hides. But once she warms up to you, she is the friendliest cat ever.
Aw, so it's not just you. Well, clearly she likes you, but anyone, if she warms up to them, that's good.
Yeah.
Before her, had you had other cats?
When I was a kid, my sister had a cat, but he hated me. It was just an outdoor, orange tabby. My main memory of him is that I pulled his tail one time and he, bit me. fair enough. I was probably only 5 years old or something. So, I learned my lesson pretty quickly not to pull on cats' tails. but when I got Lizzie, she was my first cat,
How long have you had her?
I got her as a kitten in November of 2011. So she's 9 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So she's been with you for a little while. What's it been like with her over the years? Like, has she changed at all?
She's definitely more mature now, but she has had a very eventful life. When she was about 1.5, she broke her femur bone.
Oh, no.
It was like we went away for literally one day, went to my family's for Christmas, came back on Boxing Day, and she was like walking weird. And it was a clean break. So obviously, we had the option to put her down because it is a very big injury. But she was only a year and a half. So we thought, if it had happened to an older cat, then we sort of thought, it's not worth it to put them through all that recovery. But she was only a little baby. So we got it fixed. She had to be in this big, massive cat carrier thing for about 2 months.
Oh.
And then about a week after she was let out of it, she ran away.
Oh, no.
So she was missing for 9 months.
Oh my gosh.
So we, spent $3,000 fixing her leg, taking care of her, and then she's gone for 9 months.
She needed her freedom. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And that was the most stressful 2 months of my life.
Yeah.
And then we declared her dead to the council because you have to, pay your pet rates and stuff. And we declared her to be dead because we're she's not 2 months is ages. And my mum one day finished work and just saw this little flash run in front of her car. She just knew. She's like, that's Lizzie. I have to catch her. And brought her home 9 months later. I can't believe it.
Wow. So she's clearly got some survival skills.
Yeah. She's very good at catching mice, which is helpful. Uh-huh. And so my mum actually only worked about 2 blocks away from our house. So she was incredibly close to the house. She just, didn't know how to get back, I guess.
Oh, well, I'm really glad that you found her after, that's such a long time. And that would be just so stressful. So I'm glad she's back with you. Does she still go outside today?
Yeah, she does. Well, she actually went missing again a couple of years later. That time she was stuck inside a school classroom And school was literally two houses down from my house. So she was always very close, but just gets into trouble. But now she likes to stay in the front yard, which is good.
Yeah.
She'll only go outside for about an hour at a time. So she's learned her lesson now.
She had her wild times, and now she likes to stick closer to safety. That's good. What kinds of things do you like about her?
Everything. She's just a good cat. Like, I can't, like, that's sort of not a real answer, but like, she's very opinionated. If she doesn't like something, she will let you know. I have a scar on my wrist from one time where she just decided, no, she doesn't want to be pet anymore. But, you know, that's important. I'd rather her let me know that she's not having a good time.
Sure, that's a good way to look at it.
And if she wants food, she'll yowl for hours. If she thinks she hasn't got food, even though the bowl's full, she'll still meow because she wants more. And if she doesn't know where I am, she'll like walk around the whole house meowing for me, which is pretty cute, apart from when she does it at like 2 a.m. She definitely is demanding when she wants something, but I think she likes me and that's all that matters.
Yeah, that's good.
Other than that, like, she's pretty chill. She doesn't scratch furniture. You know, that's a good part.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, she's very cuddly with me most of the time. She likes to just be in whatever room of the house I'm in. She'll just be somewhere in that room, which is nice.
Is she a lap kitty at all? Does she like sit on laps?
Yes, constantly. I'm amazed she's not sitting on me right now, which is honestly complete, like, amazing. Usually as soon as I'm sat down, she's on my lap. Or at least next to me, which is awesome.
Does she have any quirks, bad habits?
Yeah, there's one. She hates using the litter box. That's why she likes to be outside all the time. It's like she won't like go anywhere else. She will go in the litter box if I won't let her outside, but she would prefer to go outside. So if she needs to go, she will sprint around the house just causing a ruckus until I let her outside. Like, that includes at 2 a.m.
Oh, man.
But I'll put up with that.
It's a little bit dog-like.
Yeah.
Was that something that she did always, or was that something that happened kind of after the time she ran away?
That was definitely happened after she ran away, because I had her and one of her sisters, but her sister got hit by a car just before she broke her leg. But they were both indoor cats, and then we moved to a rental where the real estate said that we couldn't have them inside. So then they were outside cats. But then once the other cat got hit by the car and Lizzie broke her leg, we spoke to them. We just said, we're not having my cat outside anymore. Like, it happened in the same month. So
yeah, that's tough.
And then even then I'd let her outside just to have some fresh air and stuff. And then once she ran away, that she just decided litter boxes weren't good enough.
Yeah. Oh, what a good meow.
Yeah.
So cute.
That's right. I'll put up with her craziness when she needs to go. That's right.
I never had a long-haired cat before, so that was new to me. Had you had long hairs before?
No. So Lizzie's the only long-haired cat I've had, which is a problem. I wear mostly black clothes.
Yeah.
Because she's black, white, and orange. Like, no matter what I wear, I've got cat hair all over me all the time.
Once I got Toast, I don't think I'd had like one of those lint rollers like in my house, but I really invested and now it's a regular thing.
Yeah, I've got one in every room of the house.
There you go. I don't know if you have one of these, but I was like, I feel bad wasting so much of like the lint paper, but I got one of these things that's reusable. Hang on, let me show you.
I've seen those. Are they actually good?
It's actually good. Like, for once, a targeted Instagram ad gives me something I want, where, like, you roll with this thing, and then it collects all bunch of hair, and then you just, like, open it and toss it in the trash.
That's so good. I've seen the ads for those, but I've never bought one because I thought, surely it's not actually going to work.
Yeah. It's good for clothes and blankets and things like that, and even carpets a little bit.
Yeah.
They should sponsor me, given this advice for free. As far as the Cats movie goes,
yes.
did you saw it?
Yes, I did.
What did you think?
Cats the musical is my favorite musical ever. So I've seen it live 3 times in 1 week. Like the week it was in Melbourne, I saw it 3 times.
Nice.
I love it. I am obsessed. I did music in high school and I sang, oh my God, I've had a massive mental block. What's the magic cat? What's his name?
Mr. Mistopheles.
Mr. Mistopheles. So I sang that for my like high school final performance and I love the musical so much. The movie is not the musical.
Yeah.
Like, it's mainly like my 3 favorite cats are Bustopher Jones, Mr. Mistopheles, and Rum Tum Tugger. And Bustopher Jones and Rum Tum Tugger, I did not like. That really, I was like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if I can watch this ever again. I have a lot of opinions and we don't have enough time.
That's okay. Yeah, I can see. Having seen the Rum Tum Tugger of the musical, damn, yeah, he is fine. And I don't know, Jason Derulo I thought was great, but it's a different kind of charisma.
Yeah, it's a completely different kind. So I've seen the film of this original stage show, and that's my favorite Rum Tum Tugger compared to the one that I saw live. The one I saw live was sort of more like a hip-hop kind of rap cat. And like, it was good, but it wasn't my favorite.
Was there anything that you did like about it?
Overall, it was fun. The fact that two of my favorite cats I didn't like, it was just a real bummer.
Yeah.
But Mr. Mistopheles, his song, it was very different to what I'm used to. Because when I sang it for school, he was like a confident cat. He was confident in his cool magic abilities. And then in the film, I was like, well, he did what? Like, I just couldn't get my head around it because my experience with it was the complete opposite. But hearing, I'm pretty sure that you've talked about it before on the podcast, and it sort of changed my mind on it. And I thought it was like sweeter, I guess, and more cute than I originally thought, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's kind of like, maybe this could exist in a continuum, like a story where before when the people sing to him about how great he is and he's not very confident, but then later he becomes the very confident cat.
I feel like the movie tried to have a plot, but everyone knows that Cats, the musical, doesn't have a plot. It's just cats singing, you know? And so that was also something that threw me off a bit. It's like, well, there's a story in this. Like,
you didn't need any of that. You just needed the cats.
I just wanted to see some cats dancing.
Yeah. Cool. Well, does Queen Elizabeth remind you of any? Oh, wait. Where did the name come from? I must know.
Well, it did start off as just Lizzie, you know, like nothing fancy. Mm-hmm. And it was really just a nickname because my mom used to call her a princess because she is a bit of a princess. But then I thought, no, she's not a princess. She's a queen. and it just evolved.
Oh, yeah. That's the ultimate evolution of that name.
And then the bird is funny.
Yeah, enjoy that. Does she remind you of anyone if you had to slot her into a Cats movie or musical character?
Well, when she's at home, she kind of reminds me. How familiar are you with the actual musical?
Not terribly. I saw it when I was a kid, but I know that there are some songs and characters that don't make it to the movie.
Yeah. So Growl Tiger, in his song, he like meets this lady cat and they have this massive, beautiful romance. And so Lizzie, I feel like she's kind of a mix of Growl Tiger. And I think the cat in the song is Griddlebone.
Ah, yeah.
So she kind of reminds me of both of them. Like, she's so beautiful and sweet and nice, and also probably gets in a lot of fights when she's out exploring the town for 9 months.
Oh.
So, yeah, she's just the best of both worlds.
Awesome. Well, thank you for telling me all about her.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on.
You can see photos of Queen Elizabeth the Purred on our Twitter and Instagram at InEffableCats. And do follow Alex Xavier as well, especially his Instagram, as he is an incredible artist. Those links are in our show notes. And there is also a link there to the pet hair remover I mentioned, the Chom Chom Roller. It's a good product. If you'd like to chat with me about your cat on the show, and if you liked what you heard today, please tweet about the show. Tag us and include a picture of your cat. Also, if you like the show, please subscribe and leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, where Toast would like to know, what's something you're proud of? Toast says our original music is by Jeremy Nosato and our show art is by Tyler Donnelly. Toast, as we're wrapping up, would you like to tell the people about this habit you've picked up? No, not that you're waking me up more at night because Annie moved out with Alex, but the drinking. You are drinking from only water glasses now. I've gone so far as to put a water glass in a bowl for stability next to your food so you can have the thrill of licking up the water from one of my cups on the kitchen counter right from the comfort of our room. This is what I've done to make sure you are hydrated, as bowls do not do it for you anymore. No, you're right. I have chosen this. I have chosen to spoil you. I am just making sure you know. See you next time.